So the big question is this: how do entrepreneurial salespeople like us, who have traditionally sold alone and used gut and intuition to hit their number, take their innate talents and begin selling using science, technology, and the secrets of thousands who have done it before to crush their quota and change the world? That is the question, and this podcast provides the answers. Welcome, everybody. Today, we're on the Sales Secrets Podcast. We're going to be talking about change management. And to do that, we brought on a special guest, Mike Katz, Executive Vice President, T-Mobile for Business. Mike, thanks so much for joining. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. Change management is always interesting. And actually, Mike is a really good guy. There's only one problem I have with him, and that is that he is a Colorado State Ram. But besides that, we've had some good conversations. So, Mike, before we jump into change management, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself and what you do over there at T-Mobile?
Yeah, first of all, how dare you? But So I've been with T-Mobile for about 20 years, and I've had the good fortune to have done many, many different things here. So, you know, in my early days, working on launching some of our first markets, working with third-party distribution partners, to working on our corporate strategy team, running our prepaid business, running our handset finance business, and then recently, for the last couple of years, I've been the head of our integrated B2B business unit. Which now also includes all of our wholesale business. So it's been an amazing journey. I've had the opportunity to do a bunch of different things and work with a lot of great, great people.
And so it was, I mean, you, just so the audience knows, there's a little bit of a war between, there used to be a better war between the Rams and my BYU Cougars. That's the little inside joke there. But did you join T-Mobile right out of school, and you've just gone, I mean, 20 years later, is that correct?
Yeah, actually, I started while I was in school.
Oh, is that right?
I played baseball at Colorado State. I was injured right after my freshman year of school. I had to go get a job. I got a job. they opened this is going to date me now a little bit. They had opened a brand new Circuit City in Fort Collins, and I got a job at Circuit City. And right when I worked at Circuit City, this little company called VoiceStream Wireless had just launched in Colorado. So part of my responsibilities at Circuit City was selling VoiceStream. And I had the opportunity in that role to meet the guy who was like the territory manager for Northern Colorado, and got to know him pretty well. And at some point he actually offered me a job to work for VoiceStream. So my last 2 years of school, I moved from Circuit City over to VoiceStream, and last 2 years of school work there. And then when I graduated, it corresponded with what was then the largest commercial market launch we had done, which was Chicago. So right when I graduated, I got an opportunity to move out to Chicago and be a part of the commercial launch of that market.
Wow. Yeah. So you've been doing wireless, the telecom, I mean, that's been your life. I didn't realize that. I thought there was something in between, but,
That was it. My plan was, I come from a family of lawyers, and I was planning on going to law school. So, I like to tell people that, T-Mobile and VoiceStream saved the world from another lawyer.
Yeah, that's right, man. We got enough of those. Seriously, I'm dealing with one right now, so we don't need more of those. Baseball though, college baseball. So you were actually good enough, to play college. I consider myself, I have this funny story. I was literally at a company in Boston, and I'm talking about how I'm an ex-athlete. And then he found out that I was talking about being an ex-high school athlete. I was a baseball player in high school. And this SVP of sales at HubSpot laughed me literally out of the room because he said, you can't say you're an ex-athlete if you're a high school athlete. So anyways, college baseball, what'd you play? What position?
I was a utility outfielder. So I played left and right field. And, you know, we were joking before because I have this signed jersey of A-Rod behind me. And so I struggle to tell people that I play baseball too, especially when it's somebody like A-Rod, because I had a short college career because of injury. And I was on the team because I could run fast and throw hard, but the hitting part was definitely not my specialty.
Is that right? Oh, man. I wasn't really that good at either, but I played catcher through high school. And actually, I still feel it in my knees. That was probably I'm not built for a catcher, right? I'm like 5'11". I tell people I'm 6 feet, but I was 160. it's just not kind of your prototypical catcher. So baseball was fun though, man. I don't play anymore. I'm too scared to play softball, but you got to do what you got to do. Well, let's jump into it. Let's talk change management. I mean, obviously you've seen a lot of stuff in your career as you've bounced around at T-Mobile, but I think the thing that I thought was interesting as we talked pre-show about this topic was B2B and T-Mobile have been kind of words that, like the business division, haven't really gelled together until recently, as you guys have kind of made a big shift and you were part of that. Can you just kind of set the stage as to kind of how that came to be?
Sure. Yeah, and I'm sure your listeners who think about T-Mobile, you know, generally and historically probably didn't think about T-Mobile as a big B2B
right.
company.
Right.
You know, we very much have built our reputation and our brand off of being a consumer organization. And, you know, but a couple of years ago, you know, we're in the fifth year of our Un-carrier movement where we,
right.
you know, essentially relaunched and rebranded and repositioned the entire company around Un-carrier, which has been enormously successful. But, you know, a couple of years into it, you know, we realized that while we had just tremendous, tremendous growth in consumer, that, you know, if we wanted to continue this amazing growth trajectory, we had to look at other segments, and the largest next logical segment was business. And the thing that really prevented us from having a lot of focus and having a lot of success in business was our network. And you know, we T-Mobile and VoiceStream before that always had built network strength in the urban core. You know, your NFL cities in the dense urban area, T-Mobile worked great. But you know, you went into the suburbs or into rural areas, that wasn't the strength of our network. Hmm. The single biggest change that's occurred over the last couple of years is, you know, we've done a bunch of different things, invested in new radio spectrum, made huge, huge investments just in the infrastructure build out of our current, of our existing network, and made massive, massive expansion. That our network has more than doubled in size. And that is the single biggest catalyst that has given us permission to approach businesses, because businesses in our space and probably generally are just more, I'll call it more rational buyers. You know, they buy first on technical compliance and then on other factors like price and other things. And we always struggled to get to the second chapter of our story, which is the most exciting chapter, like all the things that we do to differentiate with our competitors. But if we couldn't demonstrate that we could meet their technical technical compliance requirements, then it didn't matter. And that's been the thing that's really driven the change and the success now in the B2B part of our business.
So you kind of were able to set the foundation. I got to admit, kudos, because you I think of T-Mobile, and I don't know how many years ago, 5, 10, you know, as being kind of this just not a major player in the market, or maybe being kind of that third tier company. And now I'm like, through the branding, the rebrand, the reposition, certainly in the consumer market, as you've said, you guys are just everywhere. Everybody has T-Mobile. But in B2B, that's been a little slower, but you've recently got into that. And I know you had a big part in that. As you started to establish the B2B business and kind of the mind frame around that, sounds like there had to be some foundational things like getting the technology, getting the network, et cetera. But as you think of the people side and what it takes to kind of run a change management program within a large organization like T-Mobile, where do you start? How do you actually start to get people to buy into this movement, this vision?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's not one specific answer to that. I guess there's probably some general, there's some things that we did that may end up being general rules that you could apply to a bunch of places. But, you know, for me and for us, you know, it really started with, looking at the people that we had and understanding the culture in which they worked in and the process and the way they went around their business and evolving it. And what I saw when I had the opportunity to join this team, I had spent the 3 or 4 years prior to this working on our consumer business, running a big chunk of our marketing organization. And one of the big parts of our success in the consumer part of our business was everybody universally, whether it was somebody that worked in our corporate office, somebody that was in a call center, somebody that was in our retail stores, all believing and buying into the things that the brand stood for, which was being completely obsessed with customer experience.
Yeah.
And taking advantage of every single one of those customer interactions to drive customer experience. And the interesting thing I saw when I came over and started working with our B2B team is they were a little bit disconnected from that culture. Huh. And, you know, part of it, I think, was just a legacy of we had years and years where we kind of almost publicly said B2B was not going to be a focus for us. And it was a trade-off. And, but we still always had B2B teams. We always had B2B teams. And so that was an awkward position for them to be in. They were part of the company, but they were kind of told that they weren't important.
The redheaded stepchild there, right? Not there. Right.
Exactly. And you know, like I said before, they didn't have some of the assets that they really needed to be successful, namely network.
Yeah.
And so they had years and years of kind of being told they weren't important, not having the tools to succeed. And it developed a little bit of this, I like to call it a defeatist culture, where, you know, people didn't expect to have success and, you know, failure kind of became okay. And so one of the first things that, you know, I tried to do when I got here was, how do we get the entire organization, aligned to simple wins? How do we get points on the scoreboard for the team? How do we find some of the things that have been persistent, pains for the organization, and make some progress on them so people can see, and feel measurable progress. So that was one of the first things we did. And so I went around the country, talked to, dozens and dozens and hundreds of our employees and kind of put together a punch list of, man, here are the things that are super, super painful, whether it was, man, running credit on customers is really painful, or, are just doing a basic transaction for an activation is not automated. So it's really painful, and tried to compile an entire list, and then prioritized it. And the prioritization was, what are the things that would be the most impactful for the team? And what are the things that we can get done the fastest to kind of demonstrate to the team that this time it's going to be different. We're actually going to make progress on this thing. And that's what we did. And we started kind of knocking things off that list. But at the same time, it was trying to recalibrate the team on what success meant for us. Cause it was really interesting dichotomy, because on one side you had our consumer business that had this massive step change, that became the new normal. Like from day one of Uncarrier, our entire organization on our consumer bias, like literally, if you look at a chart, it's like by definition, it was step change. It was immediate up and bam, that was the new normal. But our B2B team hadn't felt that. And therefore, you know, they measured and were calibrated on success differently.
Yeah.
You know, they look at like, hey, you know, we're 5% better this month than we were last month. And it's like, man, you know, I always like to use the analogy with the team that, you know, your past success defines what future success is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're the, if you're the New England Patriots, you know, future success for you, like anything short of winning the Super Bowl is a disappointment.
Right.
You know, the Cleveland Browns, you know, winning two games next year will be a big success because they like didn't win a single one last year.
Right.
And our problem was we were thinking too much like the Cleveland Browns. We were thinking, oh man, we haven't had any success. So like having, you know, one win is like a big deal, when the organization that we worked for was becoming the Patriots.
We had to
recalibrate how we thought about success and move from a defeatist culture to one where we believed that we had permission to succeed. We're disappointed when customers told us
right,
no.
Right.
Before you would see our teams celebrating the wrong things. You know, they would get a customer to like return a phone call and people were high-fiving each other. You know, which is like, hey, we're T-Mobile. We're a big brand. We've got a great proposition. There's not a single customer that shouldn't talk to us.
Wow.
And we should be celebrating when we're signing big deals, not when they returned a phone call. So,
but is that part of the, I mean, there's gotta be, you know, for our listeners out there, I think so many companies have faced in some way or another, that type of that culture of winning for whatever reason maybe has changed or it's diminished. They were growing fast and then they've slowed or particular division. I mean, a lot of people feel like they got to bring in new, someone like yourself comes in and it's like, we got to wipe out the people, bring in new people who have a new mindset. We've got to just radically transform it through, you know, sometimes just elimination of people to get in there. Is that the strategy you had to take? I mean, how did you start to piece together this new mindset from losing to kind of losing to winning?
Yeah. I mean, the short answer to that is no. That, like, you know, replacing people and assuming that we had bad people and that was the problem was not the approach that we took. And, right. and I think too oftentimes people assume that they look at the results of an organization or a team, and they immediately draw the conclusion that, okay, it must be bad people.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mistake. It's funny. My boss the other day reminded me that, you know, when he came to T-Mobile, we were really struggling. Like, yeah, and that's probably an understatement. You know, this was pre-Un-carrier. We were losing on every quarter hundreds of thousands of customers per quarter. And, you know, when it would have been easy for him to come in and assume that, man, like, this company is struggling. It's been struggling for a while. These people must all be bad. And it was funny. He was making the point in a meeting where there was a bunch of us sitting in the room that had been with T-Mobile for 10 or more years. And it made me think a ton about what you just said, that it would be so easy to assume that when results are not where you want them to be, right, or results are maybe perceived as failing results, so easy to point to the people and say the people are the problem. That's not to say that the people aren't always the problem.
Sure.
You know, I think that's important to tease that out when possible. But I think going in assuming that all you have is bad people is not a healthy assumption to make.
Yeah.
I think always starting with the environment and the environment that people are working in, the process that they're used to working in, and how the team is oriented. You know, you start there, and then I think you need to understand the people. Then you need to understand and look at the team on who can evolve and work in a different way that can lead to results and who can't. And that's when you sometimes have to make tough decisions on whether you've got the right people or not.
Yeah, but you kind of started with the environment. It sounded like as you took it on, you went to visit these different locations and started to compile your list. And that list wasn't, you know, how do I get rid of this person, that person? It was, how do we start to become more of that customer focus and eliminate maybe some of the systematic barriers that are not allowing us to get there? Do you feel like, T-Mobile consumer side had a vision. It had something that people were rallying to. Were you able to take that vision from the consumer side and just move it over to the business side? Or did you have to kind of reestablish a vision or goal that everyone started to align behind?
Yeah, you know, I think some of it. I think some of the core brand principles backstop everything that we do, regardless of, you know, what segment of the business you work on. You know, the one that I mentioned earlier, like, we are a customer experience obsessed company, and the experience customers have, drives everything that we do. And that is the same whether you're working on business or consumer or T-Mobile. I do think it's important to have some shared vision and use language and goals and targets that everyone in the organization can understand. They feel like they understand the unit of measurement that you're talking about and feel like the work that they're doing is directly contributing to it. And again, I think for us, it started small. It started with, like, focusing on a couple of these things that we knew we can control and we knew we could make progress on quickly. And then it's evolved over the last couple of years to, you know, bigger, in some cases, more stretchy type goals that are more aspirational that, you know, everybody can understand and rally around.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I was impressed when I came up to your guys' office up there is, you seem to be a real data-driven leader. That seems to be somewhat of a passion of yours. What role did data, or has data played in this turnaround, this kind of culture shift in this kind of B2B space?
Huge. You know, we've got, you know, well over 1,000 people on our team. One example, I guess, of data is, really trying to get a deep understanding of our results and where our successes and opportunities were.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things that we look at on a daily basis is, you know, it's really, really simple to measure things like, okay, which individuals on your team are performing relative to the goals that they set up. You know, that's a fairly simple measure.
Sure.
But we've tried to go a lot deeper than that, especially in B2B, because one of the things that and this was a big insight for me because I hadn't spent my career doing B2B. Most of my career has all been in consumer. But one of the things that I quickly learned in B2B is sales, and the way that we typically measure sales or activations in our industry tend to be a very, very lagging indicator, because the sales cycles for business customers are much, much, they're very elongated.
Yeah.
And so work that you're doing right now may not lead to success as measured by an activation, you know, days, weeks, maybe even months from now.
Oh, interesting.
And so one of the things that we tried to do is kind of double click on activities and activities that we felt like were really correlated to the end result that we were looking to get, which is new customers activating service with T-Mobile.
Hmm.
So, you know, looking at things like, you know, how many interactions with customers are you having? How many, you know, how many phone calls are you making to customers? How many appointments are you setting?
Yeah.
So looking at some of those kind of early activity indicators on the sales side, but also similarly on the marketing side of our business. You know, one of the things that we started doing is, and one of the advantages of B2B over consumer is we have a very well-defined target set of people that we're trying to communicate with. We know we have data for every single business in the U.S. and generally understand the composition of who works in those companies and who makes decisions in those companies. And, you know, I think looking at where we are across the marketing funnel with those companies has been a really important part of our marketing strategy, so that we can create unique journeys for every one of our prospective customers. You know, we know if it's somebody that's never talked to us, never attempted to interact with us, and we can measure incremental interactions that those customers have had, so we can determine what's the next best step. You know, should we send another email? Should we have a rep call out to them?
Right.
Should we? Yeah. You know, so I think using data in those two dimensions has been really, really successful for us.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I think a lot of leaders obviously go right to the outcomes and, you know, activation or deals or dollars. And man, if you can find those things that actually lead to have that correlation to driving that, sometimes it sounds easy, but I don't know if a lot of people can actually get there and then report off. It gets a little bit crazy. As we wrap up here, Mike, the thing I think we got a lot of people in, I think, this place of trying to make the change, right? And I talked about it a little bit before, but, you know, they've missed their quarter. They've struggled to hit their number. You got reps or managers or leaders, and they're looking for this concept of how do I pull that 180? How do I change it around? If you had to sum up your learnings in change management, kind of be like, look, if you're trying to change something, and it could be on the micro or macro level, what is maybe the one summary or takeaway statement you'd be like, guys, you got to get here. You got to see if you can master this in order to make change management happen. Anything come to mind?
Summarizing to one may be challenging for me, because it's just never one thing. It's always a combination of factors, but you know, what I'd say is, you know, one, make sure that everybody understands what it is and how success is being measured, and what specifically are the factors and activities that will lead to that success. Because what I found in this type of B2B sales was a new thing for me, and this was very different than our consumer business, which mostly runs through a brick and mortar retail environment,
right.
Is that one, direct sales is really hard, but it requires a ton of discipline and a ton of structure. And one of the things that you need to make sure first is that your teams have the structure and are enforcing the discipline. And so I think that's one, is it's a really big one for me, is making sure they understand how success is measured, they have the right structure, and they understand what the right activities under that structure are. To be successful. That would be one of the big ones for me.
No, and I mean, if people don't understand what's actually going on or what they're supposed to be doing, and obviously then what leads to success, they probably have a hard time doing it. Well, Mike, as we wrap here, appreciate you taking the time. Great talk track on thinking through change management. Certainly your guys' journey, it's been fascinating. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to be on the inside, seeing it on the outside, seeing again, you guys kind of come from a place of potentially some negativity, some bad stuff, and really move into the consumer space as a whole. And now seeing that B2B side start to dominate must be a fun journey. So thanks for sharing some of your secrets. If someone wants to learn a little bit more about your yourself or T-Mobile or the B2B side of the business, what's the best place they should go? Any directions or comments you'd make?
Yeah, thank you. So you can always visit us at our website, business.t-mobile.com. Follow me on Twitter. I try and spend some time talking about some of the things we're doing.
He's active.
And then, or on LinkedIn, we try and post some of the things that the team are doing, some of the things that we're focused on, some of the things that are helping drive our success. And anybody can reach out to me anytime through those mediums. I'd be happy to engage with them.
Yeah. If you want to, he's surprisingly active on social. Has a really cool article I think a month ago on culture and some of the things they're doing at T-Mobile. So feel free to check that out. Again, Mike, thanks so much for joining. For the audience, remember, success is just one play away. Want more sales secrets? Go to salessecrets.io to receive copies of our latest research and best practice content to help you crush your quota.